Funny.
Good afternoon, everybody. The meeting's being recorded. It is 3:05 on Tuesday, September 10th. And Ms. Hiller, after you call the meeting to order, we'll do a roll call of the committee members and staff.
Perfect. And I will call this meeting of the Rules Committee of the Arizona Board of Physical Therapy in session.
Thank you. Ms. Hiller?
Present.
Dr. Basile?
Here.
Mr. Leone? Dr. Purcell? Dr. Bordenave?
Here.
Dr. Linsky?
Present.
Mr. Packard?
Here.
Dr. Toon? And Ms. Fearon?
Here.
My name is Judy Chepius, and Ms. Hiller, the meeting is yours.
Okay, then we're going to start with agenda item 3, which are the minutes from our previous meeting on August 5th, 2024. They're posted in the shared drive as everybody had a chance to review them. I see mostly nodding heads, not shaking heads, so. Any comments, corrections, additions? Hearing none, I will move that we adopt the minutes as printed from August 5th, 2024.
Second.
Ms. Hiller moved and Dr. Bastillo seconded to approve the August 5th, 2024 meeting minutes, committee meeting minutes. Ms. Hiller?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. Purcell has not joined yet. Dr. Bordenave?
Yes.
Dr. Linsky?
Yes.
Mr. Packard?
Yes.
Dr. Toon? It's not here yet. Ms. Fearon?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Perfect. Let me do a very brief conversation and then we'll kind of get to the meat of the motion. And I believe we can cover everything today. I'm in my super fast talking mode, so that might help. But I would like, before we begin any of the remaining topics to discuss, to kind of remind the committee, we have spent months researching, discussing, processing, and looking at potential updates to the rules for what will become a 2024 five-year rules review by Government Regulatory Review Committee. Our role in this was to do all the preparatory work for the board, look at what needed to be done with a lot of input from Judy, what administratively would be helpful from the board, look at what directions we might go through. In fact, what we will end up with this report we'll talk about later at this meeting, will be our recommendations for rules that should be revisited and some suggestions we are offering the board for potential language. We will not be the ultimate drafters of anything that changes. That will be turned over to the board and they will proceed as they see fit. So, with the caveat that we've spent a lot of time wordsmithing and trying to get everything perfect, I just want to remind the group that we go as far as making the recommendations, at which point it will be the board's purview to go in whatever direction they so choose. Okie doke. That being said, of our original 12 research topics, we have actually reviewed and adopted 10 of them. We have two remaining today, one fairly simple one, one far more complex than we have spent several meetings talking about. I would have liked to start with the simple one, but since that was one of JJ's assignments, and he's not here yet, I am going to, who is that, JJ? Come in, come in. No, never mind. It was a text. I'm going to reorder the agenda, so we will begin with agenda item 5, which is research task 12, continuing competence, AACR 424-401 through 403. We're all on the same page? Here's where it gets a little conflicted, Jim. And once I have my say, then I will turn it over to you for the group that researched Task 12. What you have on your hard drive are two documents. One is an update of the report from the Group 12 Task Force that was put in as a replacement of the Research Task 12 folder on the share drive. It has the reporting out of the Research 12 group. The other document that I constructed, which is a little more confusing, has the entire continuing competence Article 4 rules with color coding to indicate some things we never even talked about. Some things like R424-401 were not reviewed in detail by the group, as well as what we did discuss, some of which we completed, some we didn't. So there's a reason why you have two documents. For simplicity's sake, I'm hoping Jim will start with the, there's no pagination on this, but start with the pages of his task group report that has to do with the recommendations for Article 4, Continuing Competence. As a reminder, if you look at Jim's report, R424-402A, we have already adopted, that has to do with credential continuing competence activities. R424-402B, we have adopted, which is the credentialing organizations for credential continuing competence activities. And that's kind of where we left off. Are we all on the same page? And Jim, I can turn it over to you.
Sure. And Karen, jump in, please, because I missed the last meeting in the discussion. So if you scroll down on it to, well, there was a couple things that we worked on. And forgive me, I forget on here for PTAs, did we come to 15 CU credits or 20?
20.
Okay. So then you'll see comments on the side that says 3 if it's 20, things like that. So what Karen and I did is, based off your all's discussion and her notes off your all discussion, is added some of the things back in for the different, for the B part, the credentialed continuing competence activities, what they include. With the focus on, with the non-credentialed, C. In-service education, clinical instruction, teaching and lecturing, publication. So we added those back in that were originally, some of those were cut out. And the language in there says 2.5 contact hours for maximum 2.5 for physical therapist assistants. That should make, that should be brought up to 3, since we're doing 5 and, you know, 30 and 20, 5 and 3.
Jim, just to be clear, we're looking at the document, the Word document that starts with revised rule change.
Yes. Okay, and scroll down all the way to the second to last, third to last page.
Got it. Thank you.
Section C, starting at the bottom, the non-credentialed, because you've already gone over A last week and B, there were, or last meeting, there were questions about C. So Karen and I went through that, and then I added some things back in that were originally cut. And so the categories for non-credentialed competence activities are in-service education, student clinical instruction, teaching or lecturing, and publications. Lori.
Yeah, can I ask a question about why a PTA gets less credit for teaching or lecturing and publication? It would seem to me that the efforts to do those things...
Stop. No, it's not that they get less credit. It's that they can use less of these for their total hours because they only need 20. So they get the same per hour credit, but a max... three credit. So PTs need 30 hours, right? So it's saying teaching and lecturing a maximum of those, of your 30, a maximum, you can get a maximum teaching credit of 5 hours as a percentage of your 30.
As a percentage? I still have a little bit of concern about that because I don't think it reflects the effort that's required to do either of those two things for someone whose job it isn't to do.
So then you're saying that in that case, then half of their continuing education credits can be from those two categories.
I guess I don't have an issue with that because I think it takes a fair amount of effort to teach a class that you've never taught before and to write a paper. So I guess, and that's regardless of whether you're a PT or a PTA. So, I mean, I can go either way. I understand why you did it now, the way you did it. I guess I feel like it should be based on the effort that it takes to do those things.
And Lori, this isn't new. This is the way it was previously, that the limit on what you could get was less for the PTA. We actually upped it.
And if I may, those limits, so I just kind of want to bring this around a little bit. So those limits were set in place originally because they were Category B and Category C credit. And Category B and Category C each had a maximum amount. They had a total combined maximum amount. And then they had a maximum amount of the different types of sections within Category B and within Category C. So in my mind, the question becomes, and I'm just bringing this up for a discussion, but the question becomes, if we're splitting continuing education ideally into a certain amount credentialed and a certain amount not credentialed, do you need those individual categorical maximums?
Well,
because overall, that's going to make everything a lot more complex to explain, to audit, to review, to understand, in essence. So, I mean, you're wiping out B and C, which is fine. Yay, yay. but so, those maximums could still now really still have the effect of still functioning as a Category B and a Category C. And those are the issues that really start wielding their head when you are automating these processes and automating the monitoring of these processes for people to input their information.
So it's a good thought. So on here, there is no, so Giovanni, when we went through it, took out the limits of there's no category A, B, C or limits. There's credentialed and non-credentialed. And we did not say a certain number of credentialed and a certain number of non-credentialed. Within non-credentialed, we did put some limits.
So would it be better if we just, like, out of the 30 hours, you know, 20 some odd hours have to be credentialed for the PT and 15 for the PTA? I mean, I'm just throwing numbers out there. You can't have more, I don't know, you can't have more than a certain percentage of non-credentialed.
We can do that and then take those maximums out of each one. Just say, I mean, you could say credentialed for PTs needs to be 15, non-credentialed max of 15, and for PTAs, 10 and 10. And we could do that. If everyone's good with that, it makes it probably a lot simpler for Judy.
Seems like it might be, make it more, facilitate compliance more. without, mm-hmm. My head's spinning a little bit just from the description.
Yeah.
And there, so, we will be addressing the part that the committee didn't address, which was 401, which is basically introduction of what the parameters are of the continuing competence requirements. That we are definitely going to discuss. That included the limits of only half your contact hours for category A and B. So we'll be coming back to that because I do think we need to restructure the program. But I would entirely be supportive. Hey, JJ.
Okay.
I'll let the minutes reflect that Dr. JJ.
Bursell.
Join the meeting at 3:21.
Thank you.
So I think based off the conversation, it sounds like, so we say minimum of 15 credentialed for PT and minimum 10 credentialed for PTA and then max 15 non-credentialed PT, max 10 non-credentialed PTA. And then everywhere below that where it says maximum contact hours, that all gets striped.
Is that what you were suggesting, Judy? To get rid of those. Somebody could do, well, you can only, like in-service education, you can only get credit the first time you present an in-service. But somebody could get half of their continuing competence from in-service, and I don't see why not. So I think that simplifies it.
Right. It does. Yes, that's kind of what I was going towards. Because the maximums really, really, really were tied into that category B and C business. But, you know, if you're concerned about somebody getting too much credit for any one of those non-credentialed type of activities, you could also do something like rather than split it in half, you could do for a PT, 20 of the 30 have to be credentialed. For a PTA, you know.
Right.
15, something along those lines, you know, you can massage it that way, but that's a lot more readily digestible by the individuals that have to comply with it.
Yep.
And then they can remember it, you know, when they're in the middle of a course, it's like, well, how many credits do I have for this? Do I need more credits here? You know, just once upon a time at the Federation, they had a model Continuing Competence Act. They've since kind of rerouted their continuing competence thought, but they had a model and it was 30 hours and it was 15 credentialed and 15 not credentialed. And it didn't get down into the minutia of, you know, how many credits here, how many credits there. That just becomes really, really complex for everybody to figure out. So.
I'm fine with that. And I'm fine with the 15 and 10, or we go 10 and try 7, however y'all want to do it.
What?
I'm good with half. It sounds like the Federation was good with half. So.
Me too.
I'm good with that. In service. Student clinical instruction, teaching, lecturing, and publication.
Yeah, so we just need to take, so, yeah, student clinic, yeah, so in service, that whole maximum of 5 hours, PT and PT assistance, that gets struck. Student clinical instruction, maximum 5 contact hours, that gets struck. Teaching and lecturing, that maximum, that whole sentence there gets struck and then
published.
Well,
should it, I mean, so I guess if you have 4 students throughout your time, you could just use your clinical instruction.
But they're only up to half.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. All right.
And then publication, you take out that maximum 5 there. there is still things below in those that tell you how much you can get per, and that should stay, right? Like a paper's 5, something else is 2.5, something else is 1, things like that.
Do you want to maintain the differential for those? I'm going to read you that paragraph B under publication. Each article published in a refereed journal, book chapter, or book equals 5 contact hours for PT and 2.5 contact hours for PTA.
No, take that out. Take the differential out.
Equals.
Because that goes to Lori's point. Why are you giving someone less credit for the same amount of work?
So that would be 5 contact hours for PTs and PTAs.
Yes.
Right? And articles published in non-referee journals, magazines, 2 contact hours for PTs and PTAs.
Yes, because there you're penalizing. Sorry, I missed all that. Yeah, because just like Lori's point, that would be penalizing people for the same effort.
Mm-hmm. We good with this?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. Is there somewhere in this area under continuing competence where you're going to see a summary of the total required hours? I mean, other than having to go to the individual paragraphs.
Yes, it's the section we haven't come to yet, which is 401. Okay. We're coming back to it, Blue.
Okay. So the other question I want to raise is that in the draft language, mm-hmm. you have continuing education units. We only use continuing education in the existing rules one time, as I've researched that, and that's about a continuing education course. Continuing competence units are used 38 times. And so that should just be an edit there. I'm assuming that should be continuing competence units. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Here's one other wrinkle. Karen, we forgot about the ethics.
Yeah, it's at the bottom.
It's at the bottom.
I think that's going to end up being credentialed. And so that's part of your, I guess my only issue with 50-50 is if we have 3 hours of ethics required, then now we only have,
7 hours of.
7 hours of, yeah. So anyway, it's just a thought. Now, I mean, I'm going to say the vast majority of people practicing PTs and PTAs do not write papers, do not teach classes outside of their own, you know,
right.
And they don't, and you don't get 5 points for an in-service, you know.
So on that though, Karen, what do you think going to 12 and 7?
I'm good with that.
So max for PTs, max 12 non-credentialed, and max PTAs, max 7 non-credentialed because of those 3 contact hours, the 3 ethics.
So does that cause you to raise your minimum 8 PT credential courses from 15 to 18? In other words,
three back mix.
So the minimum of credentialed courses for a PT is 18. And the minimum of credential courses for a PTA becomes 13.
Yes, with the caveat that 3 of those are credentialed ethics, healthcare ethics courses, credits.
Other things, Blair? Okay, there was one more section on your document, Jim. Which is draft language for new licensees to be added in our 424-401.
So, and Judy, please read this closely to see if this makes sense to you and eases, and does it accomplish our goal of not having new graduates have to get CE, continuing competence credits right after they graduate, but at the same time, making it doable to enforce?
Well, let me throw this into the mix because this is one of the things I wanted to revisit anyway, which is It seems to me if somebody gets their initial license, they've demonstrated they are competent to practice physical therapy in the state, why not just make their first renewal cycle a pass? Rather than try to figure out if they got their license in May or did they get their license in November. I'm going to suggest to the group that we just make that whole first renewal cycle a waiver following initial licensure.
So, Peg, that does that, except for the only issue with that is, and this is what Karen and I talked about. So this covers also people with their initial licensure in Arizona from elsewhere. So if you allow that whole initial, you could have someone practicing in the state who didn't have any continuing competence for 4 years if you do it that way. So let's say they were 2 years practicing elsewhere. They moved to Arizona right before their license expired, never did any continuing competence because it's initial, that period. Now they could go 4 years of nothing.
Well, not really, though, Jim, because in year three and four, they would have to get continuing competence to be able to be relicensed in year four.
Okay, so they could go 3.5 years without anything. 3 years and 9 months without getting anything, right? That's where Karen and I kind of went back where we were saying that if they come in on the year that we, you know, that basically within a year of needing their license renewal, they're fine. If they come in that next year, that year previous, odd year, they need partial. But if y'all want to make it less restrictive, we can go for that. I just thought we'd end up having some people move in from out of state and go years without any continuing competence.
Well, my first question would be, are there states that don't require continuing competence?
No, again, you've got a couple year, right? There are, we all know we have colleagues that wait 10 months or that wait 22 months and then knock out a couple CEs and renew their license. We all have friends and colleagues that do that, right?
I have friends out of college that do that. I'm not naming any names.
So if we just left it at that, as if they, you know, that first year, that initial, their initial license in Arizona, they do not need competence or continuing competence. It makes it very easy, straightforward. And the new grads would love it. It just makes it that you will have some people who've moved in from out of state elsewhere who now will go 3.5+ years, possibly, theoretically, without continuing competence education.
Anybody, I mean, you know, I've said how I feel, so anybody else want to weigh in on this?
Typically, those individuals who are coming from another state are not necessarily allowing that state license to lapse. So they would be renewing it. They would be responsible for the continuing education for that license. It's very commonplace in the industry for the first, there are some continuing competence models that are extraordinarily complex, even more so than Arizona's. There are others that are just exceedingly straightforward, and it's very common for the first cycle to be considered as a non-continuing competence cycle. Every one of those licensees is responsible for successfully passing the jurisprudence exam before they're licensed in conjunction with their license application. So they are doing that. Now if they're in the case of a student, they've just come out of school. In the case of practitioners, if somebody is licensed for 2 years in one place and then lets that license lapse and comes here, theoretically, could that happen? Potentially, yes, it could. The amount of times that's actually going to happen especially in this world right now where people are collecting licenses like Pokemon cards. It's not typical for them to really just let it lapse, and get that, you know, 4-year span. I would anticipate in reality that's really slim. That's not to say it probably won't exist at some point. But you know, that's up to you. The one thing that I will bring up about this language as it's written, now that you've adjusted the numbers, if you're saying half, what does that half mean? You know, is it for a PT or a PTA? It should also be like all credentialed, which is what it is now, anybody coming in. So right now it's equivalent to what their category A requirement is. It's 10 for a PT and 6 for a PTA. But you know, whether you decide is making no continuing competence in that first cycle a lot cleaner, it is, but we'll still have questions, you know, one way or the other. Well, when is my first cycle? I was only licensed 2 days before, you know, before I renewed. So then this is really my first cycle. So this is my only first, you know, there's going to be questions and issues no matter what direction it goes.
But can I make a suggestion on a language that might help? What if, and this is just an idea as I'm looking at the language, what if we said that if a physical therapist or physical therapist assistant obtained their initial license to practice or to work in Arizona, or to work as a physical therapist or physical therapist assistant, their first period of renewal is exempt from CC requirements. So what you say is, you say those who got their first license period anywhere in Arizona, those are the ones who are exempt for that first year.
Which is kind of how it reads if you take out the qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
If a physical therapist or physical therapist assistants obtain their initial Arizona license in this,
you don't say that. You say their initial license to practice physical therapy.
Yep. Got it.
Then you say in Arizona. Practice in Arizona.
Arizona.
You can massage the language, but the implication is that you're only talking about new graduates. You know, wherever they graduated from, doesn't matter, but they're getting their first license to practice in Arizona. And so you exempt them from the first year.
Yeah.
So we tried that initially, Blair, and Judy was telling us that it's really hard to determine whether or not someone is getting their initial PT or PTA license ever when they do that initial licensure. It's hard to pull that out versus it's just their initial Arizona licensure.
So Blair, are you talking about those whose initial license anywhere is just Arizona?
Exactly.
Impossible to manage. Absolutely impossible to manage because you're pulling the information from one place. You're setting a standard. So there's different ways to apply, but really once they're coming to the board for a license, they're coming to the board for a license. It is an initial Arizona license, regardless if they've got 25 other licenses or they just came out of school. So once they come to us, that whole new graduate idea is gone. They're going to be a practicing therapist or a working PTA. So that distinction, while it works for school and everything else, it doesn't work for the licensing of them. Because when you pull those names to audit, when you pull that, you would then have to go, okay, how did they apply? So when you're looking at their renewals that were submitted, you have to now go back to a different area of the system to find out how they actually applied originally, when they actually applied originally. And when you're multiplying that out by thousands, a lot of that is a manual process to have to identify who is who. And
here's a question. So when someone applies for a license and they have been licensed somewhere else, let's say they've been licensed in two or three states, how do you pull data on previous disciplinary action in other states?
FSBPT.
Okay. And that's the only place you pull that from.
They're responsible for declaring it. That's part of it.
Okay.
But we also pull, they have to provide a license verification from every state that they have a license in. It has to be a current verification. We look them up on FSBPT. We have access to that information. And we compare all of that information.
So my question then is if they're giving you that verification that they were licensed somewhere else and they say, no, I was not licensed anywhere else, isn't that the same thing? And can't you use that as a determination that this is their initial ever license?
When they're applying, yes, but when they're doing a renewal, that's when you go through the audit process.
That's what we're talking about here. We're just talking about those people who are applying for their first license. And it's an application for a new license. Aren't they asked that same question? Were you licensed somewhere else?
I apologize for being obtuse, but I'm not really following that. So the continuing competence hinges on renewals. It does not hinge on initial licensure. So when you're looking at the list of individuals who have renewed, you're pulling their renewal document.
Oh, yeah, I see. You're talking about a different animal here.
Their initial licensure application is completely separate, and all of that data is completely separate from their renewal.
So, Judy, how would you phrase it so that we get an exemption for the first renewal cycle for anyone who has following their initial licensure in Arizona?
Right here, right now, before that language was fully input into the rules, we would look at other states that already do this.
Okay.
But other agencies within Arizona that also do this. So that language is out there. But it would be something simply that almost identical to what's there. If they've obtained their initial Arizona license, in the current renewal cycle, they are exempt from continuing competence requirements during their first renewal. And then it's up to them, you know, they'll call with the questions or they'll misinterpret it. And then when they misinterpret it and they get audited, then we'll figure that out. But the language wouldn't have to be really detailed. It just simply would say, I mean, it would be a lot cleaner than what it is right now. If you're licensed in this time frame, you get this. If you're licensed in that time frame, you get that. It would just be your initial license renewal is continuing competence requirements are waived.
Okay. I'm fine with going with that if everyone else is.
I'm good with that.
Me too.
And a flat waiver, whether they're PTs or PTAs, whether it's they got their initial license in the first or second year of a compliance period, we'll put it in the language for our report that will work. I mean, if you all will trust, you know, me and Judy with the intent, we'll get that wrapped up. So I'm going to take us back to the first section of Article 4, which is 401. And that's going to this other document that was color coded and coordinated, because our 424-401 is the piece that we really didn't get a lot of feedback. And so let's see if we can go through it now, 20 minutes for this section. It should be fairly clear now that we've kind of all agreed on how we're structuring continuing competence. Judy, I don't know if you want to put this up on a monitor, if we can just look at it. R-424-401A, except as provided in subsection G, a licensed physical therapist. Thanks, Judy.
You got it, Peg.
Shall earn, there's the change to 30 contact hours of continuing competence for each compliance period to be eligible for licensure renewal. We've decided that it was 3 hours of mandatory ethics, and certainly we can put it in here or elsewhere under 401. But I would say the determination of the number of hours of ethics could go in under A or go under one of these 1, 2, 3s. But it'll be there. The licensee shall earn at least 10 contact hours from, that would be credentialed category A, continuing comps activities, no more than. Do you still want to have a limit to the number of non-clinical coursework under credentialed courses?
There really aren't that many of those out there. I have never seen somebody exceed that number ever.
So we don't need to set a limit of credentialed, right? We know we've changed that now to be 23 contact hours. I will update the hours as we've discussed them. I'm not going to keep stumbling over myself. But so that would be striking out the maximum from non-clinical coursework.
Right. Is everybody- In my opinion, it's up to the committee. I can't see any of you right now with this up on my screen. So.
Right. Anybody who has a problem with that, speak up. I mean, that could cover their 3 non-clinical hours of ethics or professionalism or what have you that's included. So I'm going to strike that. No more limits under A. Number 2, no more than 10 contact hours may be earned from, that would be non-credentialed coursework.
Right. Now it just needs to be changed to the non-credentialed. And what we're saying is, 12 for PT because of the ethics. And you can get the categories B and C out. It's just credentialed versus non-credentialed.
Yep. Okay. And here's item 3 is where we talked about that waiver for continuing competence. We're all together on that, right? So we're going to take number 3, and we're going to substitute what we just discussed, which was the waiver during their first renewal cycle.
But during that waiver period, they still have to do the mandatory hours of ethics and jurisprudence, or nothing.
A waiver is a waiver, so that would say they don't need to do anything, including the ethics. That ethics kicks in once they legitimately are required to do continuing competence. Discussion?
Are there any states that require jurisprudence before licensing?
We do. There's a lot of states that do, but yes, all license types, including PT compact privilege holders, have to take the jurisprudence exam. The only ones statutorily we're not allowed to require that of is those that are just simply telehealth registrants.
Okay, so it's really not a hyphenated or a slash. Those terms are not, because in the document it's slash. So I was wondering if it's really just ethics, not ethics slash jurisprudence, correct?
For the jurisprudence exam, yes, it's just jurisprudence.
So I meant for the ethics, because on the it's gray, so it's not part of the document.
Oh, the way we're I see what you're talking about. This right here
being used, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure it's ethics only.
Yeah, hopefully the next time the work gets done for rules, we will have access to be able to do a jurisprudence assessment module, and then it might be ethics slash a JAM. Mm-hmm. But because we're not anywhere close to having that done right now, I think just ethics for now is good. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully the next time, mm-hmm. we'll be able to add that back in.
What some other states do with that is they offer a set amount of credit for the jurisprudence module. Mm-hmm. I think there's like a state that'll give it like 1.5 credits, or there's a couple states like that.
Okay, so that takes us to B, and B is the same language we've talked about except with various hour requirements for PT assistance, and those would be handled the same way. Get rid of the maximum contact hours under each category and rephrase the waiver during the first renewal cycle. Judy, if you'll scroll through B.
Let me know how many. She struggles with me scrolling. Are you seeing it scroll right now?
That's scrolling, goes.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay.
And so then we get to part C. This is still 401, which says a licensee shall not receive contact hour credit for repetitions of the same activity. Do we agree that should stand? Hearing no dissent, let's go to D. Continuing competence compliance period for a licensee begins on September 1st and ends on August 31st. That's the same, correct? Mm-hmm. Okay, Judy, scroll to top of page 2.
I would argue, Peg, that in D we need to strike of an initial or renewal license. I would say the continuing competence compliance period for a license begins on September 1 of an even numbered year and ends on August 31 of an even numbered year.
Okay. Yes. Got it. Everybody okay with that? Mm-hmm. Then we get to E. Licensee shall not carry over contact hours from one compliance period to another. F, an applicant for renewal shall submit a signed statement to the board with a renewal application stating whether continuing competence requirements have been fulfilled. G, the board may at its discretion waive requirements on an individual basis for reasons of extreme hardship, such as illness, disability, active service in the military, or other extraordinary circumstance as determined by the board. A licensee who seeks a waiver will strike or certificate holder. Shall provide to the board in writing the specific reasons for requesting the waiver and any additional information the board requires. I think that stands as written. H, licensee is subject to the board for auditing. Selection of audit shall be random. Notice of audit sent within 60 calendar days. Within 30 days of receipt of the notice of audit, a licensee shall submit evidence to the board showing compliance. Documentation for continuing competence activity shall include. I don't see any reason to change that. It seems to work. And this provides answers for licensees about what the program looks like. Licensees.
I think we need to add something in here that indicates, and when we're done with this, I'm going to, that we go back to number F or letter F also, but something here should say something about, the approval body of the course.
Not only that, but that only refers to credentialed activities, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. there's not going to be any of these things if their credentialed activities was teaching a student or publishing, right?
Well, we would still expect something. So, for example, an in-service, we would get a sign-in that says, you know, who the instructor was, who the date, the time frame, all of that kind of stuff. So, so there's this fits with most everything in some way, shape, or form. But there should also be some indication of who has approved the course if they're claiming it as credentialed credit.
And that would be like a new D that says if the course is credentialed, the name of the approval organization?
Yeah, something along the lines of proof of satisfaction of whatever a 402A proof that it meets requirements of 402A.
Got it. Credentialed. Got it. Where were we? You want to go back to F?
We can continue down and then go back to F. It's not going to make much of a difference with the rest of this.
Licensee shall retain evidence for 2 compliance periods after participation. The board shall notify a licensee who has been audited. In compliance with continuing competence requirements, the board shall provide the notice electronically. Judy, do you want to strike that certified mail?
I would love to strike that certified mail.
Is that okay with it?
I think Mr. Harris loves certified mail, but nobody else does, and none of it ever gets picked up. So I say we strike it and see where it gets us.
He can put it back in if he wants.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Peg, what's the rationale for maintaining the evidence of participation for 2 compliance periods? Do the audits go back more than 1 compliance period?
They could if there was something. And honestly, so my background is in continuing education. So the number of times that a state has required dry needling is a prime example. Georgia is a prime example. They wanted certificates of completing dry needling coursework that went back as far as 2015. So in my suggestion would always be, because I've seen multiple examples of that, is to just keep an electronic file of the courses that you've completed. But yes, the board could go back. If there was a complaint, Blair, sometimes, a complaint might come in. The complaint might not show up until a year after the issue occurred. And it might be saying that it occurred a year earlier than that. We can't investigate if it's like more than 4 years in the past. So yes, some of this could come into play.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. And I really saw it as more for the protection of the licensee.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not clever enough to know they should hold on to those for a couple of years, then the law says do it anyway.
Read the writing. Read the writing.
Right. Okay, I'm going to strike that by certified mail. Okay, the board shall provide 6 months from the date of the notice for a licensee found not in compliance to come into compliance. Licensee may request a hearing. That's K, and L was the penalties for failure may be imposed by the board.
Mm-hmm.
So most of that stays the same, tweaking it for what we've changed. And now, Judy, go back to F.
So they're not submitting any kind of signed statement to the board any longer. It's an attestation. And we will have to, an applicant for renewal shall submit a signed statement stating whether continuing competence have been fulfilled. We'll need to wordsmith that a little bit to take into account the first waived compliance period in the attestation. But it's really going to be an attestation, and the application itself is signed by virtue of the fact that it's coming through their online portal that they have to have credentials to sign into. So we just have to bring that phrase up a little bit to the 2020s.
Right. It's going to be something like an applicant for renewal shall affirm or attest completion of continuing
right.
competence requirements.
Mm-hmm.
They submit their renewal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
We have now, I think, talked about everything related to our suggestions, remember, for what a continuing competence program revised looks like. Further discussion? Other points we have ignored? I'll zip it, Grammy, so somebody else can talk. Hearing none, are you ready for a motion that would be for adoption of the group, that Research Task 12 recommendations? Well, unless somebody from the group wants to do it, I will move that we adopt. Oh, Karen, you're talking, but you're on mute.
You're right. Sorry. I'll move that we adopt the recommendations for is it task 12 that have been presented and discussed. Continuing competence.
I'll second that.
Okay, Judy will catch up with us.
So I have Dr. Bustillo move, seconded by Dr. Bordenave, to adopt the recommendations from Task Group 12 for AAC R4-24-401 through 403, as discussed by the committee and supported by the documentation.
Good.
Okay, Ms. Hiller.
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Dr. Purcell.
Yes.
Dr. Bordenave.
Yes.
Dr. Linsky.
Yes.
Mr. Packard.
Yes.
Dr. Toon is still absent. Ms. Fearon.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Oh, let's hear it for task 12. Awesome. Boy, this group really has done a Herculean job. That takes us back to agenda item number 4, which was research task 8, documentation of communication between the PT and PTA on each date of service, for which there was a document in the research task 8 folder that was the one-page report. JJ, I don't know if you want to do this, if you want me to blow through it. How do you feel about that?
No, you can go ahead and go through it since I kind of missed out on last month and have been out of the loop for a little while.
Okay, well, basically, we started from the standpoint that the law does require the decision to delegate care to other personnel to be made for each patient at each visit. And so the question from the board was, would it be helpful if there was a requirement that you have to document that collaboration between the PT and any other personnel providing services for each date of service? And so we batted it around. We looked at other states. We looked at FSBPT. Documentation is really not something that's addressed in a lot of other state rules, so FSBPT had nothing to offer us. So JJ came up with the final language, but the easiest thing was to go to the section of adequate patient records, R424-304, and it's under C, therapeutic intervention notes, where we would insert a requirement to document discussion with the supervising physical therapist regarding interventions to be performed. I mean, Judy can put it up on the screen, but it is basically inserting one sentence under adequate patient records, C, therapeutic intervention notes. And I'll read it again. Discussion with the supervising physical therapist regarding interventions to be performed. And if there are no other personnel, it's going to be the PT documenting the care. Yeah, Blair, go ahead.
I had a couple of comments. First of all, we typically don't use the term interventions. This is a technicality. It goes back to the fact that we don't want to equate modalities and procedures with interventions. We talk about the intervention or the therapeutic intervention. So I would just ask for an edit to that language, and you can search in the rest of our rules, but we tend to use the therapeutic intervention. And that encompasses the totality of what's done on that day of service. So that's the one.
Inserting therapeutic before interventions?
Yeah, regarding the intervention or regarding the therapeutic interventions, but don't use a plural for interventions.
Got it.
The second point that I just want to bring up is that the language that we adopted last meeting regarding supervision of the physical therapist assistant includes a couple of phrases, and I think maybe you've even looked at these. In the first paragraph that it lists a number of bullet points, and the physical therapist, I'll read the stem sentence. Regardless of the settings in which the physical therapist service is provided, the following actions must be conducted and responsibilities must be borne solely by the physical therapist. And the ninth one is oversight of all documentation for services rendered to each patient or client. So that's in there now. That's the adoption that the recommendation that the committee is making. The second one relates to supervising the PTA in a general supervision setting. And so this language is under paragraph B, about the third paragraph down, number two. There must be regularly scheduled and documented collaboration with the physical therapist assistant regarding patients and clients, the frequency of which is determined by the needs of the patient or client and the needs of the physical therapist assistant. So it says right there that it has to be documented. And what you're saying in this recommendation, you know, Peg and JJ, is that here's where you demonstrate in your recommendation that Task Force 8 is saying put it in advocate patient records, which I'm fine with. The last thing I'll point out is that, and JJ, you're going to have to help me on this. When we made the recommendation for the practice management, I think the notes in this recommendation refer back to paragraph G under patient care management, where it talks about the documentation for care. And I think we missed putting that back in. We talked about that. Do you remember that, JJ? And we talked about bringing that back in. I don't think we did.
We talked about it, but when we were having that discussion, I had mentioned to you that we were discussing that in adequate patient records. So in regards to having that kind of verbiage put in to the rules, putting anything regarding the documentation, the adequate patient records section would be a good place to be putting that. So as long as it was somewhere in the rules, I thought that's what we were kind of talking about there.
Okay, so it listed a number of requirements. That, you know, the stem of that paragraph G, the PTA who provides a selected treatment intervention under general supervision shall document in the patient record, and there's five things there. So my question is then goes back to, do we need those five things? The name and license number of the supervising PT, the name and patient of the patient to whom the selected treatment intervention is provided, the date on which the selected treatment intervention is provided, the selected treatment intervention provided. You know, there's all these five things, and maybe we talked about whether those are needed or not. I just can't recall right now. Those might not have been needed. That's what might have been what we discussed.
I see what you're saying. We're going to find that language when we get to my super document.
And the question is, if it's removed, if any of them are removed, are you missing anything? Is it going to cause anything you missed? I agree with you.
I would hesitate to completely eliminate knowing who your supervising physical therapist is. We see this over and over and over again every month that the PTA does not know who their supervising therapist is in many settings. And so then, therefore, the overall manager of that patient is hard to then bring into compliance.
So, Karen, I hear you saying that those stipulations should be kept in.
Yeah.
Yes.
Please.
So, I have a question here, though. I agree with that, Karen, they need to know. But so are we stating here that we're still going to be one of the only states and jurisdictions that require documentation for every intervention to document the discussion with the supervising physical therapist?
I don't read it that way. There has to be something that documents that there was a discussion, but it doesn't necessarily say you have to discuss each portion of the intervention provided and get approval for all of them.
Right, but for each treatment, there has to be. So for each session, even though if you scroll up, the Director of Professional Standards for FSBPT, number 3, is not aware of any other jurisdiction that requires this.
Well, that's not what this is about. You know, this is about documenting the patient care. And if you're in these items down here are just the specifics of what that PTA has to do. The PT is still supervising all documentation, but someone has to do the documentation. And in this situation, in a general supervision setting, the PTA is going to do that. And so the only thing that would meet your concern, Jim, is if they have to document the consultation between the PTA and the PT. And it does not say that has to be daily. It says only as needed. And the other thing that we changed last meeting also says, it'll be documented and what's the language, regular or documented and, let me find it here.
Well, I'm just saying what's on the screen right now does not say as needed. It follows up that it's for for each date.
Yeah, the language we adopted last meeting was there must be regularly scheduled and documented collaboration. So I don't know how you define that, but I would say that even monthly would still be regularly scheduled.
But the language that we're talking about in R424-304C does require it for each date of service.
Yes, does the way it's written.
That is what it's requiring and what it was intended to require.
So, Jim, is it your concern that that's an unreasonable demand?
In many practice settings in our state, I think it is. And in many practice settings across the country, it is. We're one of the only states that's mandating that. That seems overly restrictive of us.
So then let me pose this question, because this is part of where we were trying to get with this, is how do you go about a situation in which a PTA is brought in front of the state board for performing interventions or doing things that the therapist did not intend in that patient's plan of care or approve of, because now that supervising therapist has to meet in front of the state board to discuss that when it was really the PTA who is not following the guidelines and the plan of care.
Yeah, and this comes back to the elimination of the 2,000 hours as a requirement for PTAs that, as I said, I know we're not in the public comment part, Peg, but this came to me as a public comment, I guess, if you want to say, that there was some concern about the elimination of the 2,000 hour requirement. Because in certain settings where you're having, maybe fairly acute patients, skilled nursing was this person's primary setting, that they were really concerned that now that these graduates, these brand new PTAs would be potentially out there on their own trying to discern what to do with these fairly acute patients, and do they have the capacity to do that, or should they be consulting? This person was in favor of retaining the 2,000 hours, but I think this at least addresses that situation in some level, that there's been a conversation about that particular patient. I guess her concern is that we're relying on someone who maybe don't have very much experience to make a judgment whether it's the right thing to do to treat this patient or not, when that's not what they've been trained to do.
Well, their training tells them that they should then make that phone call. If they're under general supervision, right out of school, then they have to make that phone call to the PT. If they're unsure,
but
that is their job.
Yes, but her point was they may not be unsure because they may not have enough knowledge to know
what they don't know.
So it goes back to then the PT. Experience. The PT has to ensure that their PTAs are capable of doing.
It's the first paragraph. It's B, first paragraph under what we adopted last meeting. The PTA's role is consistent with that defined in ARS, etc. Services provided by the PT assistant must be consistent with safe and legal PT practice and shall be predicated on the following factors: complexity and acuity of the patient or client's needs, proximity and accessibility to the physical therapist, supervision available in the event of emergencies or critical events, the type of setting in which the service is provided. All those things are there, and the responsibility, you know, is primarily the PT's to make that decision, but the PTA has to also weigh in on that. So, you know, my, not to relitigate this, but, you know, we're testing people for entry-level competence. They get licensed with that assumption of that entry-level competence. And then there's these requirements for ongoing determination on a case-by-case, day-by-day basis by the PT and the PTA, whether they're competent for that setting. I also want to go back to the language in G. I don't read that as meaning that consultation has to be daily with the PT. Number 5 says whether, this is what has to be documented, whether the PTA consulted with the supervising PT during the course of the selected treatment. It doesn't say they have to consult with them. It says whether they consulted. So again, if that's an every week or every 2 week or every month, they have to document that they did. Are you reading that differently?
Well, what I'm reading is statute that says for each patient on each date of service, the PT has to determine delegation.
That's in the statute.
So that's in statute.
Well, we can't change that anyway then.
That's correct. So based on that, all we're doing here is saying, well, then the documentation should meet that standard, which is the documentation should reflect that required consultation.
Well, I'm with that should be a recommendation that goes back to when we change the statutes next time. That should be one of the things
we do it next time.
I thought we did change it.
No, we haven't changed anything in statute, Jim.
Yes, they all have. They go into effect in 4 days.
Many things changed in statute, but it did not eliminate the language that for each patient on each date of service, a physical therapist shall determine the use of assistive personnel. Yeah, that didn't change, Jim.
Okay.
But it's the document is there. Once we get into maybe there you go, Senate bill. And where is that?
What statute is it, Peg?
Yeah, it must be try 4301.
4301.
I'm going to find it right now in my print copy. 1, 2, 3, Article 3. It's 2043H.
It's not coming up with any.
Keep going. Up. Too far.
2043.
You go.
Down.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. For each patient on each date of service, a physical therapist must provide and document all of the therapeutic interventions that requires the expertise of a physical therapist.
But that doesn't say consult with the PT.
Oh, you are correct, Jim. And me, the statute specialist, missed it. Okay, well, I sit here flabbergasted. So we go back to inserting language that requires documentation that isn't mandated in statute. Jim, good catch.
Well, here it is, Peg. Documentation for each date of service must be as prescribed by the board by rule.
And the rule in G5 does not say it has to be daily. It says whether the PT assistant consulted with the supervising physical therapist.
But what was on the screen earlier was different than that.
Well, I don't remember having statutes up there on the screen at all.
No, no, this right here. So C, R24304.
C.
Under adequate records, this states what's on the screen right now is that that discussion must happen each date that therapeutic intervention is provided.
Correct.
So Blair, this contradicts what you're saying.
Right. Says. Right. Yeah, I would amend this right now.
And delete the addition of that third sentence. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think it's covered under G. Put G back in like Karen is suggesting. The whole paragraph G. And just, I think that was our intent, JG. I know the discussion we have, but
put it back in. Which paragraph G are you talking about?
I'm looking at in our existing 424303, patient care management. It's the existing paragraph G. And it didn't get back into our subgroup's recommendation. And I think we intended it to be back in there.
So there's another document that's in the folder called Documentation in AZ Statutes and Rules that was in that research task 8. It is a Word document. And that's where you all added that whole 5 that I don't think's in what's on the screen right now.
Well, you've stymied the stymier because I'm a little confused at what I'm looking at.
Yeah, so if you go to the Research Task 8 folder, the second file in there says Documentation and AZ Statutes and Rules. If you pull that one up, I think that's what you all worked on last meeting. And then when you're in R24-303, Patient Care Management, it goes A, B, and then jumps to G.
And which one, which file was it again, Jim? Tell me when
it was. It's the one that's on the screen, Documentation in AZ Statutes and Rules. So if Judy scrolls down to Patient Care Management, see how we have Section A, Section B, and then it jumps to G. And Blair, this is that G section that you've been talking
right,
about, correct?
Right, right. Where did this document come from? I'm not sure I'm familiar with it, where it came from.
I just found it in the folder.
It was in that task group 8 folder. I see exactly what you're saying, and it skips over G.
And then.
Yep. So that would be inserting G back in there.
Yeah.
Of course, that's 2043. That's statute.
And then under adequate patient records.
Well, I think G wasn't in there because it didn't relate to documentation.
G is specific to general supervision.
Right. So in adequate patient records, I think that that's the thing, because the stem says for each date of intervention these things have to occur, then you don't want that paragraph, that item number 3, the new one, discussion with the PTA, or because discussion with the PT regarding interventions to be performed, that should not have to be daily.
I would put I would say you could keep that in and put comma if appropriate.
If appropriate.
And that might be a little too wiggly, but I'm not saying I don't want to get rid of that consultation because I do think it's very valuable, but there are settings where
it only occurs
when there's an issue.
Yeah.
Because the PTA is a licensed professional supposed to be following the plan of care.
Right. I can agree with that. I would just put it right after discussion. Discussion, comma, if appropriate, comma.
Yeah, because you have the objective data from tests and measures if collected, right? And so here would be discussion, if appropriate, with the supervising. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm following why I'm so confused. Thank you. Section G that you're referring to is not in statutes. It's in rules. So the document you pulled up is statute language. And what we've suggested here, in the intervention notes. So you're saying, would you change R424303G?
I put G back in our subgroup's recommendations because we did not have it there. I'd include that now as is with the caveat. Hang on a second. Let me look at it.
You're talking about adding number 5 to that?
Number 5 to that.
Yeah, that just goes back. It's already there. It's already existing, but it didn't make our subgroup's recommendations. Yeah, put it back in. The whole thing.
All of G, which is fine. Does that mean that's under 303? So what did you want to do with C? Discussion with the supervising, when we're back now on to adequate records 304. Discussion with the supervising physical therapist regarding therapeutic intervention to be performed if, what was your language?
If appropriate. Put the comma after discussion. Discussion if appropriate.
If comma. Appropriate. Thank you. Got it. No, I've got it. Discussion if appropriate. Okay, and we'll put G back in. I got it. So we're back to our topic, R424304, adequate patient records, documenting communication between the PT and PTA. That would say discussion, if appropriate, with the supervising PT regarding therapeutic intervention to be performed.
Yes. The therapeutic intervention. Not interventions.
No, it's therapeutic intervention singular.
Right.
Got it. Have we lost everybody, or are we all together?
I'm there.
Lost, but not forever. Okay, back to the meeting. Can we take, and we got the change to insert G back into R424303. Are we all on the same page? Can we move forward on research task 8, inserting a now modified sentence into adequate patient records under C, discussion if appropriate. Discussion if appropriate with the supervising physical therapist regarding insert therapeutic singular intervention to be performed. We got this? I thought this would be the quickie. Well, we overlooked some things. Anyway, any further discussion? Then I would move that we adopt the recommendations of task group 8 as amended at this meeting.
I'll second.
Ooh, that was wild. As soon as Judy reads it back to us.
So, Ms. Hiller moved, seconded by Mr. Packard, to adopt the recommendations from Task Group 8 for documentation of communication between PT and PTA as amended by the committee on 9/10/2024. Ms. Hiller.
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone. Sorry, he's absent. Dr. Vercel.
Yes.
Dr. Bordenave.
Yes.
Dr. Linsky.
Yes.
Mr. Packard.
Yes.
Ms. Fearon.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Judy, do we need another motion to go back and amend the recommendations from last meeting, then to include G under patient care management? Or can we do that as part of this motion?
Well, I think we're going to be talking about the overall recommendations. And so potentially within that, we identify the changes that we want to make to what's already been adopted.
Okay. All right. So on that point, will we get a, one of the first documents you gave us when the committee started was the draft rules revision for 2019. Are we going to see something similar, Peggy's master copy of all the changes that we're suggesting? Is that when we do that? Is that how we'll adopt any changes?
Well, the format you saw was how I'm going to report it back to the board, right? So yeah. We can adopt changes today. My report to the board will be in this format. It wasn't going to be putting them, I mean, what were you referring to? The beginning document of the rules that included the changes from 2019? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I guess my simple question is, how do we make sure that G goes back into patient care management like we talked about today when it was part of last meeting's recommendation?
Well, that should be in this master copy. And if I didn't capture it all, we're going to have to go back and recapture it, okay? Because this ultimately is a report out from the committee. Can I do it like that first version? I absolutely can. If this group, I'd like to talk through all the points. And if we need to send out a strikeout version of the rules, that's what you're asking for, Blair, right? That would include all these changes. Knowing these are recommendations and the board may not adopt any of them, would you be comfortable adopting that by vote and not by virtual meeting? Individual responses to Judy. My point is this. The board is going to consider this at their October 1st meeting. They have no more meetings for September. And we need to get this to them in October, so they can file their 2024 rules review reports and activities. So either we need to schedule another virtual meeting in the next 2 to 3 weeks, or we do this via email.
So one thing to consider, that 2019 document that you all got, that's a document that has already gone through actual rule writing. So anything that Peg would draft up is still going to be not potentially the way it really would be. The first and foremost step in this process with the rules, with the five-year rules review, and I've never been through one, so this is a learning experience, and it's due in November. So there's some work still to be done. But my understanding is at that point, the language is not necessarily ironed out. We're representing to the committee the changes that sort of need to be made to the existing rules. And that's going to cross paths with that 2019 because that hasn't been finalized yet either. So exactly how all that meshes, I don't really know yet. But I'm trying to say that anything that got put together like the 2019 would still not be accurate because it's not something that has gone through all of those steps to get through the rule writer or anything. This is just the recommendations that the committee is making for the things that need to be changed with potential language to be considered.
So Blair, would that meet your needs even if the version I'm going to insert all these changes on is likely but not 100% what the rules language from 2019 is going to look like? Will it still meet?
Yeah, I think so. I'm fine to do this, you know, do a last look at just simply by email. I got my question is pretty narrow. Will G be in or out? You know, we made a mistake in not making a recommendation last meeting. I want it back in. I think
we're going to put it back in today.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay. And then I will get something out.
Need a motion, right? Doesn't need a motion.
Doesn't yet because it's the next agenda item, okay, which will need a motion. So we're now on agenda item six, rules committee recommendations to the board, for which we're going to be talking about this draft document. It doesn't have a lot of colors in it. It's just kind of boring, black and white and gray. But what I'd like to do, and hopefully you've all reviewed this document, is to go item by item, reconfirm that's what we said it would look like. That's what we hope. And then when we get to recommendations from research tech six, Blair, we will be able to make a motion to put back in paragraph G. We good?
Yeah.
So, oh boy, doesn't this look like it was the days when it was nice and simple. Coursework tool, research task one. We recommended the board amend current language to accommodate the FSBPT retro coursework tools.
I just have a comment. Maybe Jim can answer this. I read Lori Perlmutter's chief delegate report, and the House of Delegates is changing foreign educated physical therapists to internationally trained. Is this the actual name of this tool? Do you feel like that is going to be changed? And should we use that terminology?
Great question.
That is the name of the tool.
It's currently the tool.
I can tell you that's the name of the tool.
Which is the name of the tool?
Coursework Evaluation Tool for Foreign Educated Physical Therapists.
Do you think they'll probably change it though because that was their...
I don't know because it's not owned by APTA, I don't believe.
Oh, fair enough. Okay. Okay.
The other factor is in our statutes, they're still referred to as foreign educated.
Okay. All right.
Well, I think at this point we're stuck with FEPT.
Okay. Thank you.
So we came up with a suggestion that we can change the language by insert the statement using the version of the coursework tool appropriate to the applicant's time of graduation or newer, which gives the board the latitude to require what tools they feel appropriate. Any reason to revisit this? Judy, that takes us to research task two function, in which the group recommended, in light of the fact that we do have in statute a definition of functional limitations, but not a definition of function, we could go through rules language and in place of functional status, insert a term that is already in statutes and rules, which would be functional limitations. And so that's what you'll see in this draft document, which were the changes we considered and adopted at a meeting long, long ago in a galaxy far away. So Judy, if you can scroll through B and let's see if there's anything that anybody has concerns about. I'm assuming you've read these all, so we're not going to take the time for you to read it on screen. Any issues with this? Judy, scroll if you would. Keep going. There's D. for reevaluation. Keep scrolling, and that gets to the end of research task two. Any reason to revisit or reconsider what we adopted? Okay, we're going to move on to research task three, TOEFL. And we're recommending that the board amend current language for with the following substitutions. Strike either of, because there's no longer an internet best taste. They're all internet based. And then adopt the new current TOEFL standards from FSBPT. Any reason to reconsider this? Okie dokie. Research task four, renewal requirements following initial licensing cycle. We'll get to that when we look at number 12. Research task five, professional relationships, which we are recommending that they replace the current language to clarify when the provider-patient relationship ends, and good luck to the board. Little editorial comment there. Anyway, we're certainly not going to read through this today. I don't know if you've revisited it from what we adopted. Good leadership from this professional relations group. Who is professional relations? Give kudos where they belong. Anyway, any reason to revisit this? Just kind of scroll through it, Judy, because we're not, everybody's not going to sit here. We have 15 minutes, so. And the amendment to the definition at the bottom, amending R-424-1132 to remove references to professional documents that are not adopted by the House of Delegates. Any reason to revisit this? Okay, supervision of PTAs and aides. And I'm not sure where in your draft we're going to put G. Oops, Blair, you're on mute. Blair.
It will go last, and just re-letter it to conform to the other paragraphs.
So we're going to scroll down to the bottom.
So it'll go after, actually keep going. So it will become a new paragraph E.
Got it. So insert G as a new paragraph E. And it will appear that way on the final document I will send you.
Okay.
And you also want to see it in rules language inserted. Is that correct?
Well, this is rules language.
Right. But when we talked about doing a strikeout version of the rules like you saw from, I mean, this is a lot to insert into that document. You also want to see it there, correct?
Yeah, there all you'd be doing is changing the letter to from G to E.
Gotcha, because it's still in there. I think since we're inserting this from what we adopted last time, that this is where we would need a new motion.
Okay. I move that we retain what is paragraph G under whatever section this is. I can't remember which one it is. It's 303.
Yep.
24303, I believe.
Yep.
As but read letter to paragraph E.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second that.
Thanks, JJ. Ooh, 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 ooh. 14 minutes.
Okay, so I have Mr. Packard moved, seconded by Dr. Purcell, to retain the current R4-24-303G in the drafted recommendations to the board, but renumber the section as letter E.
Yes.
Ms. Hiller.
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Dr. Purcell.
Yes.
Dr. Linsky.
Yes.
Mr. Packard.
Yes.
Ms. Fearon.
Yes.
That motion passes.
And I'm going to make one more motion.
Judy.
I'm sorry. Yes.
You skipped me.
Oh, did I? Dr. Bordenave.
Yes.
My apologies. Well, no, that motion still passes. And now
it still passes. I just thought it should be documented since I'm here.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I gave you an X anyways in the appropriate.
You voted silently.
Good and assumption.
Judy, can you scroll back up to paragraph C? Because I have one more thing I will throw into the mix. There it is. Oops.
This?
A little farther. Nope, not there. I want you to go and go to the next language. No, scroll down.
Down?
Keep going, yeah. Right there. Okay. Positive language, R424303. We're keeping the ratio the same, 3-1. And in my mind, trying to say one can be attacked, and one can be a student, and two can be PTAs, I kind of think that's overload. Even though the previous language did designate how many of which type, I would like to throw out to the group whether there is any interest in just cutting all of those designations. You can supervise three people, and it's up to your judgment who you are supervising. Without the law saying, yeah, but you can only have one intern, and you can only have one PTA. So that's my discussion point. Anybody in the group feel the same way?
Well, I would just bring back the discussion that if you're dealing with, I'm not sure that one PT is going to want to supervise three people with restricted licenses.
We would hope.
Mm-hmm.
And so there would be an exception or an outlier that would be problematic in my mind. That would be an argument in retaining this kind of specificity. When we designed this, it was to give, you know, the maximum number of people for those who would be more skilled and not need as much supervision. So the PT assistant would be the, you know, the highest number. Aides would be the two, and everybody else would be in the one. So I still think there's validity in keeping this ratio myself.
Okay. I would agree with that. And especially now that students are not part of the ratio.
Gotcha. Okay. Anything else you want to consider with research task 6? Okay, let's move to research task 7.
One point of clarification. Does this... is this for general supervision as well?
I believe it is.
But general supervision only applies to physical therapist assistants.
Correct. It's not applied to anybody else. But right now they can only supervise two. So that means they could supervise three.
That is correct.
Karen, any thoughts on that?
I feel like in the settings where that happens the most, unfortunately, the PTs are out of the loop a lot, even though they're supposed to be seeing the patients every fourth visit. So it's a tough one. I can live with it.
My suggestion is to leave the recommendation as is, and as you go back and as a board with staff and you discuss these things, if something is a, you know, is a problem and you see that as a problem, then discuss that and potentially amend it as a board before it goes on to the, to GIRC.
Yeah, fair enough. Thanks.
Anybody else? Okay, then we get to task 7. Student PTs and PTAs, we didn't need to do anything because they of Senate Bill 1267. Everybody still okay with that? Research task 8, we just talked about today. And you'll see that language as we've discussed in the final version of this I will be distributing, along with the strikeout underlined version of the rules. Research task 9. We've talked about supervision ratios. Research task 10, requirements of 2,000 hours, which we eliminated. Any further discussion about that? Laura, you presented something, you know, public comment, if you will, and I guess there will be time for that before we adjourn.
Otherwise I don't have anything.
So let me just point out that this possible language paragraph would be out of order since we already adopted other language for 24303.
That is correct. It was inserted in that. No.
We use different language.
Mm-hmm. Dealing with the 2,000 hour requirement.
Right. And even other language, for example, A, before delegating performance, that language is not in the other, in what we adopted. There was language about, you know, selected treatment intervention, but it doesn't have that language.
As long as they're not conflicted, I say this. What if they don't like our recommendations for it completely changing the language for supervision of other personnel? And yet, under patient care management, we might still want to change that. I mean.
Well, you have existing language that's in there. And what you're seeing there with this language here is only modifying sentence 1 and 2. And one was dealt with in the new language under 303.
Yeah.
And 2, we just had the discussion already. So it really doesn't pertain.
So research task 10 has been addressed by our other tasks.
Right. That's,
I mean, what you say makes sense, Blair. Any reason why this research task was subsumed in other language?
I agree with Blair. I would just double check the final to make sure it is all taken care of.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's all under research task 6. Got it. Now make sure there, those two sentences that they're licensed, I'm sure that's there, just that they've got adequate training. Okay.
Yeah, that whole paragraph I read you earlier today, you know, focuses on this, ensuring that they're qualified.
So, Judy, you think we need a motion so that to change our recommendation, or we just recommending that it's now included under 6?
Well, I don't necessarily think that we need a motion for that because we've got both of these research tasks. It would just be moved in this draft, which is.
Got it. Okay. Research task 11. All right, we got 5 minutes. We can do this. Discharge summary. This was quite a discussion, I think, maybe at our first meeting. But we had suggested they amend language to clarify discharge timeframes from a single episode of care rather than discharge forevermore. And so these were the changes that we discussed under research task 11. We can kind of scroll through them. Any reason to revisit what we adopted? That I don't hear anything, so. And then research topic 12, we concluded today. Right? So I'm not going to ask that this be, we don't need a motion, I don't believe. I think this was a discussion item, but you need to see the final form in order to approve it. And so let me go back to my agenda.
We don't necessarily have a mechanism to approve by email. So my thought is that all of it has been adopted, and in essence, it just needs to be compiled. So if there's any, if in the compilation of it, there's any kind of discrepancy, I can certainly send out an email as long as I am not on the French Riviera. I can certainly send out an email, you know, clarifying any of those components, because there, you know, there were several things dealing with 303 and with 304. So putting them all together, there might be a little bit, but again, this is recommended language.
Correct. Correct. And what I will do, since Judy will be traveling, is I guess that can be our future agenda items, but we won't have a future agenda. Future meetings and timelines. We've been through six. And like I said, I don't think we formally need to adopt what we've already adopted. So that means my timeline would be to alter this as we've discussed and send out to each of you. It'll come from me, so it'll be individual emails, okay, that will have attached this and the strikeout version of the rules so you can see it. And I will be giving you a request to reply to me with any changes or problems you have. I'm going to get this out. We're on the 10th. So if I get this out to you, let's say next Monday the 16th, that gives me the weekend to work on it as well. And I ask you to get back to me by the end of the week. When do I need to get it to you, Judy, for the October 1st meeting? Your materials deadline.
The longer the board has to review this, the better. Unfortunately, if I don't have it by the 17th, they won't have it until the 26th.
Which is still 5 days before the board meeting. So you need it back on the 17th. So I need to get this stuff out sooner. So that means Friday, it's going to be hard to... Yeah, if I get it to you on Friday, do you think you can get back to me by the 16th? That gives you the weekend.
Yes, yes.
Lori, you think you can do that? You'll be in town. JJ, I need to see heads wag. Oops, nod. Everybody, all right, that's my job, to get you both of these documents by the 16th. And you will get any feedback to me. If I don't hear from you, I'm going to assume everything's great. So I don't have to send out another wave of emails that says, please remember to get back to me. So your time frame, I get it to you on Friday and you get back to me by Monday.
So right? In essence, you're compiling all of it and the committee members are proofreading it.
Correct. Correct.
But these are all the things that have been adopted already.
Correct.
So I'm just making sure that that's in the record of what's going on.
And certain of us, I'm sure, like Mr. Packard in the upper left corner of my screen, is going to meticulously read the documents to make sure I didn't screw it up. So we have a proposed.
We have a history of editing together.
Yes, we do.
When does this go to the board?
October 1st.
Okay. And so that's when they deal with it at a board meeting or have a special meeting or?
It's a board meeting and they're going to have to, and you'll all get an invitation to that meeting. Not that you need it. They're all public meetings. Everybody can join.
Good reminder.
But I'll just make sure it's convenient. I was thinking of something. So the board will have to take action on this because we still have to get it drafted. So, the 5-year rules review has to still be drafted, which is going to be a big task in and of itself.
It's not a task of this group, correct?
It's not a task of this group, no, but it still has to be done based on the board's determination. So yes, if there's any possibility of getting this to them in their packet for the 17th, that would be hugely beneficial to give them time to review it. But one of the other things to look at when you're looking at it in this circumstance is, does this make sense when it's all put together? Are these rules still something that helps to regulate this practice the way the board has to regulate it? So
as far as our research committee is concerned, our rules committee is concerned, we submit this.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they accept it and they discharge the committee as having met our purpose. Mm-hmm. And from there, they'll do whatever it is that boards do.
Mm-hmm.
For our purposes, I know this is kind of pushing it together, but we have no choice. We need to get it to the board in October because they need to file for what their intention is for the 2024 rules revision. They don't have to have all the language ready when they make the filing. That's the beginning of the process of them adopting the language.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Peggy and Judy, could you make sure we also have a copy of the updated statutes? Maybe we already do have that, but based upon the legislative action this last session.
It's not published yet.
Okay.
Those statutes have not been updated yet because they're not effective yet. So that won't even be starting until 4 days. So we'll assume that they'll get it, which means our links on the website will automatically update. So those statutes are all linked on the website under the resources menu on the statutes and rules page. So that's going to be your best access to the most updated version, because creating a document of those is a manual process of copying and pasting all of those and creating a table of contents. So that will not happen by the 17th. I promise you that.
Sorry, Blair.
All right. Well, even what you showed us, Peg, a document that had some of the strikeouts. Is that something that we have?
That's in the file. So what,
it's just the SB 1267 document.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is correct.
Got it.
And here is how, I'll just give you a little tutorial how to get to the information. So if I go to the board's website and I go to the resources menu, this is where the meat of the website is, if nobody has been here before. The statutes and rules page, these links are all here for all the statutes. So when these statutes change, all of these links, specific to the Board of Physical Therapy ends at 2056. But as the statute language changes by the legislature and the Legislative Council, I believe, does that. These links should be updated, show updated information.
Okay, thanks.
But then, Blair, that's the closest to being what you've asked for.
Yeah, okay.
Because that was the Senate final version.
Mm-hmm.
Okie doke. Okay. Well, I got to tell you, this has been awesome and awe-inspiring. Thank you all. You've done a lot of work. One more process to go. We got a week, 8 days to finish this. It's been a blast. 5:06. First, I have to do, there are no future agenda items, a call to the public, which is agenda item 9. Is there any public to be called upon? No, I don't see any. That being said, I would, any motion to adjourn? Okay, I'll make the motion to adjourn. You're going to make me do it all.
Second. Ash, second.
Peg, thanks for your leadership, too.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peg.
I listen to these meetings, and I can't believe they gave me a microphone to talk the way I talk. But what the heck?
It's been moved and seconded to adjourn. Ms. Hiller?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. Purcell?
Yes.
Dr. Bordenave?
Yes.
Dr. Linsky?
Yes.
Mr. Packard?
Yes.
Ms. Spiron?
Yes.
That motion passes. The meeting is adjourned at 5:07, and the recording will stop at 5:07 as well.